So Brooks Richards, Realtor.
Well, as I was saying at the end of Reel 1, sweeping for magnetic mines was always, and indeed for acoustics later, was always in fairly shallow water, as there had to be sufficiently near the source of the magnetism or of the acoustic waves in a ship to be detonated. And therefore, minesweeping was usually within sight of the coast, and so it was on this morning at 11 o'clock when we were just finishing the sweep, and I was laying down buoys to mark the edge of the channel, and I was standing on my left foot using my pre-war sextant. I not having been issued with one by the Admiralty to take horizontal sextant angle to fix this down by more accurately, when there was a dull boom and the ship went up about 30 feet in the air with an enormous column of water just clear of its stern on one side. And this was, of course, an acoustic mine that we just passed over and had been duly activated, laid by aircraft. And as luck would have it, particularly as I had Bill Lord on board quite without any authority, nobody in the crew was even seriously injured. I had a broken leg, purely because I had all my weight on one foot at the time. I was leaning back like that to take my sextant angle and got the full shock on one leg and the ankle simply went. However, the ship went down by reasonable stages. We got all the crew off into lifeboat, and then the examination vessel, whose business it was to examine merchant shipping coming in, which was the Camper Nicholson yacht, came steaming across, and by the time I was ready to leave Sèvre, then about to disappear under the waves, I was able to go straight on to the examination vessel alongside, having got off the confidential books and various other things I thought might be useful, including some personal papers of mine, and was the rest of the crew had already left before, and the ship disappeared under the waves somewhere off St. Anthony's Point, the entrance to Falmouth. And I was in hospital, in a small Siemens hospital in Falmouth, where facilities were pretty primitive and X-ray very dodgy, and my leg was rather badly set. And I had a convalescence of some weeks, which was partly spent with my parents and partly at home. And by pure coincidence, pure chance, the morning that the Sèvre blew up, a man named Jerry Holdsworth, who was to play a large part in my subsequent 2 years of service, was calling on the retired admiral, who was naval officer in charge at Falmouth, to discuss with him and to get his permission to set up a base for what was then termed SO2 and later became SOE. SO2 was one half of SOE at that time. It was the SO1, of course, being the propaganda side. It became PWE later. And as he was with the admiral at 11 o'clock in the morning, there was this dull rumble from seaward, and the admiral looked out and said, "Damn, I've lost another minesweeper." Great pity. Rather promising chap in command, too. Well, I didn't meet Holdsworth for some months after that, but I laughed a good deal when I discovered that, in fact, he'd been witness of my discomfiture that morning. But more immediately relevant, while I was in hospital, and I may say that in a book by Cecil Hampshire called The Secret Navies that I borrowed off you, where they've got a great chunk about Bill Luard, Hampshire, who was more of a journalist than a historian, I suspect, and who'd worked in the, I think, in the old Admiralty Press Office, said that Luard, whom he'd some paragraphs previously described as having a total disability pension, was on his minesweeper in November 1940 when it blew up. It was my minesweeper, in fact, and Bill Luard wasn't, of course, even in the service at the time. Detail from anybody who wants to use Hampshire as a source should therefore be carefully checked. A second book of his describing operations in the Mediterranean, where he described operations from Bastia carried out by my friend Andrew Croft with some of the men that I'd worked with in the Channel and Western Mediterranean previously. Andrew Croft was interviewed by him, but subsequently, when I borrowed the book off him, Andrew gave me a sheet detailing 50 errors he found in the account. So that, as documentary material, it needs to be looked at rather carefully. Anyhow, Bill Luard and I, while I was in hospital, while I was still in hospital, we got to talking about the Breton fishing boats that were to be found in all the ports of southwestern England at the time, refugees from June 1940 and others that arrived even after that date. And we knew that there was a small group of these boats in Myla Creek off Falmouth Harbour. We didn't know what on earth these were supposed to be doing. Others were fishing from New Lynn. But Bill Luard knew a good deal about Breton fisheries, having sailed down there time when I was sailing with him, and we both got very interested in Brittany and in Breton fisheries. And Bill had been to sea with the Tunnyman from Concarneau. And between us, we wrote a paper that I think must have borne my signature, because he was outside the service even at the time, but perhaps we both signed it, saying, in effect, why don't you use these refugee fishing boats to come and go to Brittany, because you've really got representatives of almost all the types they've got, and using them with proper knowledge, you could come and go to points of your choice on the coast if you wanted to land people or pick them up. So this was in November 1940 that we were reasoning in these terms. And of course, neither of us knew at the time that there was already a quite considerable coming and going of Breton fishing boats that had continued after June 1940, right through into the autumn of 1940, up to the time when we wrote this paper, because the German control of the coast was imperfect to start off with, and, for example, an old man called Jacques Guégan, who was nearly 70 and who figures in my subsequent story, had taken several parties of British soldiers in June 1940 at the collapse of France. First lot he took to Jersey, but the second and I think a third lot he took straight across the channel to the English coast and then returned back to the Morley River. And the Germans at that time hadn't really got a proper system for controlling the movement of the thousands of small vessels on the Breton coast. And on the west coast of Brittany, as is well documented in an absolutely excellent book compiled by a French historian about escapes from Brittany in the Second World War, entitled Par les milles plus longues. His name is Roger, R-O-G-E-R, Huguen. I never know how to pronounce his name. It's Breton, H-U-G-U-E-N. And this book was recommended to me not many years ago by a professor of Paris, one of the Paris universities, whom I met after becoming chairman of the Committee of Management of the British Institute in Paris. And after he discovered my connection with Brittany, he recommended this book. And it is precious source material, but somewhat misleading and difficult to, if one's trying to establish the history of contact from Great Britain into France, because its prime purpose is to describe escapes from Brittany, and you find in footnote form references to a landing of agents. That isn't part of his subject matter, really. But there are plenty of other books published in France from which one can piece together the early days after June 1940 in the way of the first departures of people as agents from London. They were almost without exception at that time, they were the Free French people sent back by de Gaulle. Indeed, as in June and July 1940, there were a large number of Frenchmen who'd come to London who didn't want to stay for one reason or another. They hadn't volunteered to join de Gaulle and they wanted to be repatriated, and this was done by some kind of informal understanding between Vichy and the British authorities and indeed the Germans. And de Gaulle took advantage of this to send back into France his first agent on the 17th of July 1940. He was a man called Mansion, M-A-N-S-I-O-N. But there were others who went back in the same way. André Weil-Curiel, who was sent back to have a look. He was a socialist politician, was sent back to have a look at the political situation in Vichy and to try and drum up some support for the Free French, was another. And at that stage, of course, no one really had a clue what papers were being required by the German authorities to circulate in France and what degree of control they were going to exercise on the coast, so that this was in fact very valuable that by the repatriation operation it was possible to send back particularly this man Mansion, who came back a few weeks later on a fishing boat from, I think, Douarnenez or Camaret. It certainly is recorded in Huguen's book, with papers that could be copied and so on. And therefore, on the intelligence side, though SIS, MI6, call it what you will, had been left in June 1940 without any means of contact or communication with France whatever, And were under great pressure from Winston Churchill to produce intelligence about what was thought to be a likely German invasion of this country in the latter part of 1940. And of course, they turned round to de Gaulle, and de Gaulle produced the first people, as I say, in this repatriation operation. After that, others could be sent. And the fishing boat operations, the two-way service provided by fishing boats that were able to come over and go back to Brittany, was very precious at that time, and enabled people both to come back and, in some cases, to be sent over. And there were a small group of these boats that were put aside specially for this type of operation. And this was the small group that Bill Lord and I had heard of, that were lying at Mylar in Falmouth Harbour. Well, the Hugon's book contains such material as is available to me about that period, and the first man in charge of those operations was I can't at the minute lay my hand on the name of the original Free French officer, naval officer in charge of the Milan party. I think it was Milon, M-I-L-O-N. The first direct landings in early 1941 on the coast were in late 1940, there was one on the north coast by a Free French motor gunboat, working under SIS's naval section's orders, and I think under command of Stephen Mackenzie, whose activities are well recorded in Hampshire. It put an agent ashore on the Ile de Brea. All these contacts were essentially connected with the intelligence problems of the day. In June 1940, SOE had been set up as a separate organization, bringing together Section D of MI6 or SIS, which had been concerned with sabotage, and parts of the War Office structure. This is all well recorded in Michael Foote's SOE in France. But the new organization started, therefore, with very scanty resources. It was initially, for example, dependent on SIS for its radio communications. And as far as sea transport was concerned, it came very much under the wing still of SIS's naval section, headed by Captain Frank Slocum, a regular naval officer, again, well recorded in Hampshire. But the problems of SOE really called for some capacity to mount transport operations to and from the continent on its own account. And we there began very early to run into the problem of divergence of interest between SIS and SOE insofar as the north coast and west coast of Brittany was concerned. Now, Jerry Holdsworth, whom I mentioned as having been at Falmouth on the day my minesweeper blew up in November 1940, had joined Section D of SIS before the war and had been sent by them to Scandinavia to study possible ways of disrupting the iron ore traffic from Norway, from the Narvik area, both directly down the Norwegian coast and across by rail into Sweden to Oxlösen, which is the northernmost ice-free port in the Baltic, because this iron ore was destined very largely for the Ruhr at the time, and the Ministry of Economic Warfare were very concerned to do something to interrupt it supply. So Holdsworth, who'd been in turn a rubber planter and a filmmaker for working, he'd been head of the film section of J. Walter Thompson's advertising agency, in fact. But he was an amateur pre-war sailor and had a Bristol Channel pilot cutter of his own. He was, after a first mission with Mary, his subsequent wife, to Norway, he was sent back to Sweden with cover as an agent for a firm of Newcastle fish canners to buy Brisling. But he was in due course arrested with others involved in the project in the vicinity of the iron ore loading plant at Oxlösen, and he would have stood trial, no doubt, for attempted sabotage. By good luck, he had in his pocket a letter to the Prime Minister of Norway from Olaf Hambro, who was then SOE's representative in Stockholm and subsequently became head of SOE itself. And the then Prime Minister of Norway, we're talking now about the winter of 1939, was another Hambro who was a relation of his. And the letter was to introduce Jerry Holdsworth to him in connection with aid for Norway scheme of some sort with a charitable purpose. And the Swedes obviously decided that somebody with a letter addressed to a neighbouring Scandinavian prime minister perhaps oughtn't to be treated as a mere saboteur. So although they tried and sentenced to several years of prison a man called Rickman, who was working with Holdsworth, who was in jail for the rest of the war, Holdsworth was either released or allowed to escape from police custody and crossed the frontier into Finland and got out on an iron ore carrier, British iron ore carrier, as a deckhand from Petsamo, and turned up in March 1940 at Barrow in Furness and reported back to London headquarters. He spent the summer of 1940 burying arms at various points in the English countryside, because the first thing that SOE had to do was to prepare for a potential German occupation of Great Britain. And using the Home Guard and one thing and another, this operation proceeded during the summer, caching arms in suitable places, arms and explosives. And in August 1940, the infant SO2, only been in existence as such for some weeks, wanted to send a group of agents to Brittany. I have not managed to identify these, and they may very well have been, given the confusion between the services at the time, they may have been as much concerned with intelligence as with SOE activity. But Holdsworth, anyhow, volunteered to try and put these men ashore on the north coast of Brittany, near Roscoff and the Ile de Bas, which lies off it. And he went to Newlyn, and he requisitioned a Belgian yacht, because at that time the Navy really had very scant resources that could be made available for operations of that sort. It was under such pressure on its escort duties and the height of the Battle of Britain, so that gunboats and motor gunboats really couldn't be spared at that time. I think probably the very first operation for SIS carried out at the Ile de Brea, as I was saying a few minutes ago, carried out with a Free French motor gunboat of some sort that was subsequently destroyed in bombing of Portsmouth. And there was a second one that was also destroyed in bombing Portsmouth. So that at the end of 1940, there were really no high-speed craft available at all for this type of operation. Well, Holdsworth, with a scratch crew, tried this operation with this requisitioned Belgian yacht and had endless trouble with engine breakdowns and so on, and the operation failed. And he wrote a report saying that he thought it was perfectly practicable to do such operations, but it required proper organization, proper training for the personnel involved, and selection of vessels that would be particularly earmarked for this purpose. And once he'd written this report, he was told to get on and do it. And it was that that brought him, November the 4th, 1940, to Falmouth, getting permission to establish a base at in the Helford River, just south of Falmouth. Holdsworth was told he could have the choice of two French fishing boats, and he went and picked, his first choice was a vessel called the Mutin, that had in fact belonged to the French Navy, though she was of the shape and rig of a Breton tunny fisherman, sailing tunny fisherman. She had been, in fact, built at the Sable d'Olonne for purpose of training a specialist pilotage service that the French Navy